Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to see how the antioxidant, very rich Indo-Mediterranean foods can help you prevent heart failure. Very important study from Halberg Hospital and Research Institute in India and the Fukuoka University in Japan. We have about 10 other good studies to share with you, always some peer-reviewed literature from respected institutions. Then, we have not heard, unfortunately, from Judy Mikovits, so I'll be responding to claims that she has made. I'll also be responding to some of the claims of Professor McCoy, a highly respected Irish academic and scientist. And because when I played a clip, I didn't have an opportunity to ask her questions directly or to challenge anything she might say. That doesn't mean that what she said is all good or not good, acceptable or not. I have to share a perspective that some people are coming from partly their experience, but also partly their feelings and beliefs. Those may or may not be right. I'll be offering challenges to both of them. Today, a special commentary from Charles Ortlieb. Now, Charles is not here, so I'll offer it for you. And he is on to something. What exactly he's on to, I'll share with you. But it's something we should know more about. And also, is that big brother behind the medical mask, Bill Gates, to co-fund South Korea research on the next generation of quarantine methods? Also, the New York Times published an article, finally, that challenged the equity partners as being responsible for many of the bankruptcies we're seeing. Well, it's only 40 years too late. We've been doing this all along. Once again, they got it partially right. It's what they left out that's important. I'll fill in all the blanks today and show you why, in my opinion, the most reprehensible, vile human parasites are anyone, everyone associated with equity partners from Wall Street, GE Capital, or any of these other firms. We should not forgive them. They should be held morally accountable for crimes against legal, but in my opinion, moral crimes against individuals by the millions, tens of millions of people they've caused to lose their job. These people don't care, and they're always selected for positions like Mr. Kravitz, head of Channel 13's board. What does it say about we as a society when the worst amongst us at the moral level are the ones that we give the most important positions in respect to? I'll deal with that today. And we have some comments. We've been told get antibody tests because once you have the antibodies, you're protected. Not so fast. There's no proof of that yet. And I'll deal with that. And we're going to bring James Corbett in from the Corbett Report. Now, James is going to be live on the air with us in about 3 weeks. He's finishing up part three of his Bill Gates exposés. We shared the first two with you last week. Also, David Crowe from Canada will be joining us on an upcoming program to challenge the idea that everything's in the antibodies. This has been a fallacy for the entire time vaccines have been offered. Also, herd immunity is what we need. Get more people out, get them exposed. That's the thing. We've heard that repeatedly from multiple people. Not proven. Again, theory. So that's what we're up to today. A lot to share. And I'm going to leave time for you to call in and share your points of view. We all know that the diets that we're consuming can lead to pathogenesis, including cardiac dysfunction. That's not controversial. Why? Because any diet that promotes inflammatory response is oxidative stress responding and pro-inflammatory, meaning when you have a French fry, hot dog, hamburger, coffee, carbonated beverages, sugars, alcohol, you're creating inflammation in the body. Recently, cohort studies and case-controlled studies have demonstrated that Western-style diets, that's your sugar diet, meat diet, and less physical activity, leads to obesity and all forms of behavioral risk factors of heart failure. Pre-heart failure can be defined as a state of myocardial dysfunction, which is at very high risk of developing complete heart failure and dying. It is similar to prediabetes or prehypertension for developing diabetes mellitus or hypertension. Pre-heart failure is characterized by changes in your cardiac muscle that are known as remodeling, which may help to keep the blood pumping. But ventricular walls may eventually weaken and are not able to pump adequate blood to the circulatory system, resulting in chronic heart failure. You see this in a lot of people who have swollen legs. Intermittent claudication. You see this in people who get dizzy, and then you check and their pulse is generally high, their blood pressure high, because their heart is having to pump harder. You also see this in people who are chronically dehydrated, which is a lot of athletes. So what we do know the pathophysiology of cardio dysfunction, as well as the conversion of physiological remodeling to pathological remodeling and heart failure. But what do we know about rebuilding the heart, protecting the heart, thinning the blood naturally? We have that also. And that's why when you look at a meta-analysis, including three randomized controlled single-blind trials published in peer-reviewed literature, you see, wow, those that had the most polyunsaturated fatty acids or monounsaturated fatty acids, those who had the most fruits and vegetables, those that had the most nuts and seeds, they have a better heart, a healthier heart. And as a result, they're not having to increase the size of the heart to compensate for being excessively overweight. So this is the latest study. So we know of the Mediterranean diet, but the Indian diet, the subcontinent diet, is also very similar to the Mediterranean diet. And it can cause significant prevention of heart failure, including arrhythmias. So eat a healthy plant-based diet and help protect yourself against myocardial infarction and a risk of other cardiovascular diseases. It was back in 1970 that I attended a retreat where I was invited as the young guy on the block, and all these other people, I'm in my early 20s, they're in their 60s and 70s and 80s, but they look very vital. They didn't have any of the diseases we now associate with the normal aging process. Instead, they went on long hikes each day. They liked mountain climbing. They had lean muscle. They were strong. And their eyes were very clear. And what they said is, all your health starts in your gut. I really didn't fully understand that. I would in time. But today, Harvard University says the gut microbiome influences ALS outcomes. This was published in Nature magazine, the current issue. Now, ALS is amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. And so if you want to help prevent that, have healthy bacteria. But then again, if you want to prevent almost all diseases, have healthy gut. When you're eating a healthy, clean diet, lots of fresh green juices and vegetable juices and fresh orange juice, grapefruit juice, lemon, lime, tomato, grape, pear, apple, you're rebuilding the gut. When you eat sauerkraut or other fermented foods, you're rebuilding the gut. So we know that a healthy gut means a healthy life, but people have known this throughout time. We're just getting it now. So here's two issues on that. Think of how many people have had to die needlessly by diseases we could have prevented, including heart disease. Think of all the suffering people have had to go through, including all the itises and irritable bowel syndrome, etc., all because science wasn't willing to trust or believe that which has been proven in the natural world. I just have this to share with you. Reality always supersedes scientific discovery or explanation. So should we only wait till the scientists tell us the truth? And then ask yourself, how often are they wrong? So they didn't think anything about the gut or diet or beverages. They were wrong. Millions died or suffered. Those people I met with in 1970 at an old retreat upstate New York, they were right. A 90-year-old woman who came into WMCA studios one day, and she just had the big, brightest blue eyes and this wonderful white hair, and she had this big smile when I came out of the studio. She says, "You're the new Bernard McFadden." I said, "Well, I'm not aware who he is. I'm sorry." She said, "Well, he was my husband. And but we had health retreats all over the United States, and I brought you a first edition signed of his books." I read them. They were very interesting. Some things I would agree, some not. But overall, he was a big believer in juicing and cleansing and colonics and physical exercise, vigorous sunbathing, by going out in the wintertime. Now, that was not original to him. That's done in Japan. It's done in Sweden and Norway, many other countries, where you go out in the snow and then you come back in the hot water, back and forth. And there's good science behind it, just like there's great science behind infrared saunas. But it takes a while for closed-minded, arrogant people, narcissists, and that's most of the medical community, to actually realize there are things in life they're not smart at. But maybe some people who don't have those degrees are. Now, don't ask anyone to, you know, bet your life on what they know, but I'll tell you this. That woman, about 3 weeks later, she drove a bunch of us up to one of her old places. It was closed, but it was in Livingston Manor. It overlooked this beautiful valley. And then she described everything they did every day. They would have a muesli cereal. They would have all this juicing. They had a press, and they would press out all this juices, all kinds of things. They did exercise, vigorous exercise. They did a form of meditation. Not a whole lot different than what some of our leading health spas are doing today. And that was in the 1920s. So you see, truth is eternal. So just understand, the health of your body is directly related to the health of your colon and intestines. Also, if you're having trouble getting pregnant and you want to have a pregnancy, Harvard University is saying that eat organic and regulate the pesticide industry, because the pesticides are a problem. And the Journal of the American Medical Association just published studies indicating pesticide-treated foods in fertility problems and documented large increases in human exposure to the world's most widely used pesticide. That would be glyphosate. So eat organic and stay away from the pesticide. That means cleanse and rebalance. Also, vitamin B12 could help protect the retina of people with diabetes. This is from the National Institutes of Nutrition in India. And they took a careful look at this study, and B complex, but also B12, are very important, including not just for the brain and the nervous system, but for the eyes. And that's what they found. So if you have diabetes, make sure you're getting about 1 milligram a day of methylated B12. Also, the University of Auckland, which is New Zealand, found that fasting and probiotics can help prevent diabetes. That's right. Now, of course, we know that low-calorie diets are part of the trick here. And by eating more salads and vegetables, those are low-calorie. And the calories that are higher, like in avocados or nuts or oils, they're healthy fats. So healthy fats, but otherwise staying away from the simple sugars and making sure you build up your body with probiotics. Now, mind you, there's a lot have been on the market for a long time, and those are like apple cider and apple cider vinegar. These are prebiotics, and that builds up healthy bacteria in your intestine also. That's why having a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar in the morning is good for you. Additionally, greater midlife dietary intake of omega-6 polyunsaturated fats and plant-based fats are associated with lower risk of cognitive impairment. This is from Huizong University of Science in China. Quite simply, if you have a healthy amount of sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, chia seeds, flax seeds, you're getting the oils from those. Those are very healthy for your heart and for your brain. And that's what it's saying. Get healthy fats from plants And of course, olive oil as well, top of the list. And coconut. And you can help prevent cognitive impairment. Also, one last thing here from Massey University, New Zealand. Blueberries are linked to a lower breast cancer risk. Women might be able to reduce the risk of breast cancer by eating more blueberries. That's according to the study here. So I would say a pint of blueberries a day would be terrific. And by the way, tomorrow I'm going to talk about the benefits of drinking lemon water, because MedPage just came up with a whole study on it. And they are right. And all of you taking your lemon water in the morning, you're doing the right things also. We're going to come back in a moment. When we come back, we're going right to a comment, a response to Dr. Judy Mikovits. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you from all over the world and all of the stations that carry our program. Thank you for sharing. And remember, we can create the scholarship. Write the articles, three last week, three the week before, two the week before, over 70 articles on important topics, whether it's 5G and what's wrong with it, to creating award-winning documentaries. And by the way, the latest documentary, which I'll be premiering in August, I can't show it before then because it's qualifying for a very important film festival. But it's already won 16 awards, including Best Documentary, Best Environmental Film, Best Wilderness Film, all these awards. And that's just in the last 2 months since we finished it. So this is a powerful film, most powerful I've ever produced. And we'll be releasing it. And I'll let you know when that's going to happen. All right? But right now, I'm posting a lot of the lectures that I did during this retreat. During our anti-aging clinical study. Most of the people left on Saturday. One small group is left this week, and then it's over, at least the on-campus part. Then they're going to continue at home. And already we're getting blood chemistries in, and they are phenomenal. I mean, phenomenal. In fact, the one person who I thought would not be good ended up having the best blood chemistry of anyone. And we're talking about blood chemistries that were created not by me, but by two of the leading, most respected anti-aging medical doctor and scientists in the world. And we followed those criteria exactly. And plus, one of the medical advisors to the Olympics is, and one of the best exercise medical physiologists in the world, said, here's the exercises they must do. We finished those. They all went up high numbers. I mean, one guy did a 6,200% increase from the first day to the last day. How about that? His name is Bruce. And so we're seeing something is just, I never thought it would be possible. So not only did we do the first study and came out positive, the second confirmatory study is done with the exception of three people, but all the rest in the on-campus study are done, and we just shot right through the roof on this. So that's it. I'll be preparing everything, and after we submit it for peer review, and it goes to the scientific groups that are overseeing it and get their feedback, then I'll broadcast the results on the air. In any case, I've been having people on who have different points of view on the COVID virus. Some I agree with, some I don't. I don't believe in censoring people. I believe if they've got something to say, let them say it. You can agree or disagree. And if I have them on, I'll agree or disagree. But when Dr. Judy Mikovits, Mikovits, came on, she made claims that she did not support. So since that interview, we've asked her repeatedly, please send us the documentation. She has not. She has not communicated at all. So we're responding. First, her claim the COVID strain was weaponized in the United States and Chinese laboratories. Our challenge, whether the virus escaped from or was released from the Wuhan lab, is a different question from whether it was genetically engineered. It's true that the evidence indicates it did not originate in a wet market. And of course, the existence of the lab near the epicenter of the outbreak is suspicious. But even if it could be proven to have come from the lab doesn't mean it was engineered. It's known that researchers at the lab went out into nature and collected samples to bring back a bat viruses for the study. And it's possible that it escaped from the lab. I've heard a lot of people making declarations. I've heard a lot of people claiming different things. I've yet to see the hard evidence of that. And therefore, I've kept quiet on this, just like I've kept quiet this whole time when the Liberal Democratic Party was saying that the Russians intervened in the election and that's who hacked the DNC and then spread Hillary Clinton's emails. As of tomorrow, I'll break my silence by bringing some of the world's leading authorities on cybersecurity on the air. We have Bill coming on. We have Benny. We also have Ray McGovern and others. And you'll see the truth. The truth is that there was a failed attempted coup de grace in the United States. The coup failed, and shame on them. Now they should be held accountable in courts of law and public opinion. All that tomorrow, an hour at noon, an hour on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Chris Hedges is also on tomorrow to discuss this as well. Claim, back to claim. Claim, she said, the strain was engineered using the HIV virus because of some shared sequence. What we found was that scientists from India claimed early on that COVID-19 contains a sequence similar to a sequence from HIV, which they described as peculiar, and which was interpreted by many as meaning that it was genetically engineered. However, they were roundly criticized for their conclusions. The paper's authors voluntarily withdrew the study from publication. The key point of the criticisms is that the similarity is certain to certain parts of the HIV genome sequence by no means suggests that it was engineered because these sequences are common in nature. For example, they are also shared with common human coronaviruses that cause the common cold. Now, in her defense, Luc Montagnier, who was awarded the Nobel Prize for his discovery of the HIV virus, has publicly stated the COVID-19 strain was genetically engineered based upon his analysis of its sequencing. However, the genetic sequencing is publicly available to thousands of virologists and immunologists and geneticists around the world, most of whom would conclude that it is not a conflict of interest on this matter, and it's only one small group that claim it was engineered, but all the other people have looked and said, it's similar, it's not the same. She claims wearing the mask literally activates your own viruses. You're getting sick from your own reactivated coronavirus expressions. Okay. The research shows that this is nonsensical. If you're breathing in the virus that you already have in your nose, how does that change basic exposure? Your immune system has either been exposed and created a protective immune response or not. Now, what I would offer is this. I do not believe that the mask is doing the job it's supposed to do. First, 70% or higher people who've contracted the coronavirus have done so in a close proximity, generally at home. That means that for the average person, they will experience the coronavirus with asymptoms, meaning no symptoms whatsoever. That means their body has actually fought off the virus. Now, here's what we don't know. Did the body fight off the virus and have some protective antibodies? Now, Dr. McCoy said, yes, you're protected for life. That is an opinion that is not based upon any science. Now, she has a right to her opinion. She does not have a right to dictate what actual science is because some people have been reinfected, and other times antibodies in and of themselves are not always shown to be protective. For example, the people who got the measles vaccine, the chickenpox vaccine, the whooping cough vaccine. Also, a large group of them came down with the actual diseases in a more virulent form. We've said for a long time that if you look at the actual immunological scientific data, the question of whether or not a given vaccine is automatically protected for life has never been established. Never. And that's why you have to keep getting boosters. And that's why sometimes we don't know how many boosters, and individuals will vary depending upon their beginning immune system, whether you have a strong immune system or a weak immune system. The best vaccine in the world is breast milk, and that's never discussed when it comes to helping infants. But vaccinating their body is, in my opinion, that's a crime against humanity. But that's my personal opinion, and I put that in a series of documentaries and articles. But keep in mind, no one at this moment anywhere can say that everyone getting getting the coronavirus is going to be protected for life. That is an unscientific hypothesis, all right, whether it's from Judy or anyone else. Now to the idea of breathing. One of the problems of breathing is that people who do have the virus should be quarantined, but in a different type of quarantine than what we're having now. I believe that when all is said and done, if you took away the indemnification that the hospitals, the workers, the nurses, and everyone were given, you would find massive amounts of litigation for wrongful death, wrongful procedures, including the intubation and the infections and the death by using the ventilators. It is astronomical. The fact that the governor of New York put people with COVID virus back into nursing homes where those people were already immunocompromised and had no immune system and they had comorbidities, and then they all died. That's on him. Now, of course, being a politician, he will never take that responsibility, but that's how foolish. And at the same time that nursing homes were dying, anywhere from 35 to 50% of all deaths now are from nursing homes or people in some form of assisted living center where they can't go out and they have comorbidities. Why weren't any of those people put on the Navy ship? You could have quarantined all the people, and instead of putting the internal air machines in, oxygen machines, why not use external? Why not use hyperbaric? Why not use the things that the scientific literature show actually work, like high doses of vitamin C and vitamin D, zinc? No, because the future is for people who are patenting the drug. So this entire pandemic has been controlled by the Bill Gates and the thousands upon thousands of small companies and foundations that receive his largesse, and he controls the profit and the product. So it's nonsensical. I don't believe that people benefit at all. In fact, you should not be exercising and wearing a COVID mask outside. You're outside running? Let me explain the basic physiology. You're breathing in oxygen, and hence you're reducing your oxygen flow coming in, and you're exhaling carbon dioxide. So do you want to be re-inhaling carbon dioxide? You're just going to create more free radicals, and you could go into oxygen debt. There are times to wear a mask. Yesterday on a plane, I wore not one but two masks and an air purifier and gloves and everything else. I was protected. I knew what to take before I got on, when I was on, and when I got off. Immediately washed all my clothes, put a little bleach in, then recycled them again, shampooed, showered, because it could be in your hair. It was interesting because at the airport, they were virtually empty. When I talk about empty, I'm talking about Dallas Airport empty. I mean, I walked down for 15 minutes. I didn't see a person. And then when I got into another airport, there was not a single plane, except for the plane I was on, not a single plane and not a single person in the airport. It was all closed down. So what is the purpose then of a mask at that point? There's a time to take your mask off. There's a time to breathe. There's a time to exercise. There's a time to get sun, time to build your immune system, and that should be every day. This has been one of the most unmitigated disasters in public health, if not the most unmitigated disaster in public health in American history. But on this one, Judy is, in my opinion, on the wrong side of this. Claim Italy was hard hit because of the flu vaccine using dog cells, and dogs carry the coronavirus. The facts, Judy, only one flu vaccine uses canine cells for culture. They use chicken embryos. There is no study indicating high compliance of a flu vaccine in North Italy that can show an association between flu vaccination rates and coronavirus infection rates. That is merely speculative. The dog culture flu vaccine theory doesn't make sense since this particular coronavirus strain was not identified until well after the vaccine was manufactured and will not explain why it first appeared outside of Italy, where the new novel flu vaccine was only being used. Now, we have the evidence. I've written several articles on the flu vaccine, what's wrong with it, why it doesn't work. You see, if that, mind you, you're dealing with multiple coronaviruses out there, and you don't have a vaccine that's worked for any of them. That's why every year you have to get another vaccine, and they have very low, as low as 6%. But that's based upon a mathematical model that is itself completely flawed. Let me give you an example. Let's say that 1 million Americans took the flu vaccine, and none of those Americans got the flu. They will say it was 100% effective. No one knows how effective it was because you don't know what other lifestyle or behavior indices created a protection. But they're taking all the credit, and that's not the way science should work. So on that one, not so. Now, what we do know, have a better understanding, is that in northern Italy, people were heavy smokers. It's a senior community. It's where people, let's put it this way, senior, like in, let's say, Orlando or Tampa or Fort Myers or, you know, Clearwater, Sarasota. But the difference is, in northern Italy, people are not on healthy regimens. Massive air pollution. In southern Florida, you don't have air pollution, but up there, you have massive air pollution in Italy. And also, you had people getting other medications and being fearful and going into hospitals, but their regular underlying conditions weren't being treated. So there was a shortage of hospital space for people who had a need for their regular treatments, whether it was high blood pressure, diabetes, or cancer, or emphysema. But I'll let you hear from some Italian legislators in a few moments on that. Claim. Dr. Judy claims that Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Robert Gallo stole her and Dr. Russetti's research that purports to have isolated the HIV virus and claimed it as their own, causing millions of deaths. At the time of HIV's discovery, Mickiewicz was a lab technician in Russetti's lab at NCI, National Cancer Institute, and had yet to even receive her PhD. There is no evidence that we can find that she was part of the team that first isolated the virus. Her first published paper, co-authored with Russetti, was on HIV and published in May 1986, 2 years after science published four papers that link HIV, then called HTLV-3 by Gallo's lab, to AIDS. That paper dealt only with mechanisms of large granular lymphocytes against HTLV-1 and HTLV-3. Russetti's first paper on HTLV-3 appeared in August of 1985. Mickiewicz is not noted as an author in that paper. There is no evidence that Fauci held up any publications. You may dislike Fauci, but if you go on radio and television and you start going all over the internet and millions of people are following you, then the least you should have is hold up a paper and say, here's the paper, here's the date of it, here's an affidavit from Dr. Russetti, highly respected researcher at the National Cancer Institute. It shows that we together isolated the HIV virus and we wrote the paper, but then Fauci called me and then Gallo called and they wanted to see the paper. And when I refused, when Russetti came back from vacation, they got the paper from him and they stole it. Then show us the paper. Those are the kind of papers you don't throw away. Show us your lab notes. Show us that you actually wrote somewhere that you isolated this. Show us any of your coworkers, including people in the electron microscopy department, who can prove that that was the HIV virus. Because here's what we do know. We know because we actually have it. And I'm going to be posting it later this week. We have the original article written by Pavlovic, who headed the National Cancer Institute's viral lab division. He worked with Robert Gallo. We know that he took a look at what had been given to him by the Institut Pasteur, and there was no unique viral isolation. In fact, he had the head of the National Cancer Institute's electron microscope division take a picture of that, and there it states that there is only a viral particles here, meaning they didn't discover anything. Gallo comes back, and he scribbles all over this manuscript. I mean, really rageful. He then goes ahead and says he discovered the virus and published it in Science magazine. Little did he know at the time that the person who was working with him and actually done a lot of that original work and wrote the paper gave a copy of both to a relative in Europe. We have the copies. Those copies were sent to Science magazine and asking by a whole group of very prestigious scientists for retraction to challenge Gallo. Gallo never responded, nor did Science magazine. In any case, at no time, at no place, with the thousands of hours that I was researching and everyone else I know in the field, do we see Judy's name mentioned anywhere. Nor do we see anywhere Rossetti's name mentioned anywhere. So there is no evidence at this moment that such a paper that you claim Fauci and Gallo stole exists. If you have such a paper, wouldn't that be one of the most compelling ways in the world to challenge Fauci and Gallo? That if you had such a paper and proved that you two were the original authors, you could destroy Gallo and Fauci's reputation overnight. There would be a lot of people interested in seeing it. If you don't have it, then you're responsible for making claims that are not supportable by facts. Also, you claim that the Institute, or Rossetti, and the lab received HIV samples from Montagnier at the Institut Pasteur. Again, we cannot substantiate this claim. There is no history of it in those who have written about the medical history of HIV and AIDS, including John Crudston. Crudston is probably the most brilliant authority on the real history of Gallo's role, and he's not complimentary to Gallo in the AIDS crisis. We also have written directly to Luc Montagnier in France to get verification whether your claim is correct. We have not yet heard back from him. When we do, we will share that. You claim you were the first to isolate the xenotropic murine leukemia virus, the XMRV, that you associated as the cause of chronic fatigue syndrome. Your paper, published in the prestigious journal Science, argued to have found genetic markers indicating the presence of retroviruses, including one that I just mentioned, the XMRV, and a virus in the blood products of patients suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome. Our research, the claim is partially true, but you continued to push the XMRV chronic fatigue syndrome hypothesis, and we could find no merit. This is the paper that was published in Science magazine and caused such controversy. Researchers show that the XMR was created accidentally in the lab during mouse experiments. It may never have infected any humans. The authors first retracted two figures and a table from the paper in October 2011. And around the same time, a study by several labs, including Whitmore-Peterson Institute, where you would end up doing research, showed the findings could not be replicated. Remember, I've told this audience many times, over 67% of all scientific studies published in peer-reviewed journals could not be replicated. That's why I had to redo my study also to show that it could. So 2 months later, the entire Science paper was retracted. Mikovits refused to sign the retraction notice, but she took part in another major replication effort, the $2.3 million study led by Ian Lipkin of Columbia University and funded by the National Institutes of Health was the definitive answer. Mikovits stated in a September 2012 press release where the results were announced, the rigorous study looked for MXMRV in blinded blood samples from nearly 300 people, half of whom had the disease, and none, not a single one, had the virus. Quote, there is no evidence that XMRV is a human pathogen, end quote. That, I believe, was what you conceded. Other studies seem to confirm that the antibodies to XMRV in the specimens studied were due to contamination. Now, though she herself stated 8 years ago that her research was erroneous, she now has resuscitated it again, as if the internet doesn't exist and we can't do this research. Mickiewicz's critics claimed that she had only published 2 papers and therefore she should not be recognized as prominent person as she is. However, the National Library of Medicine's PubMed database lists 50 research papers she has co-authored in scientific journals. Therefore, her critics are wrong on that. Although Mickiewicz is accused of making a claim that she was the first to isolate the XENOTR trophic murine leukemia virus, we can find no evidence to support this. Instead, XMRV was discovered by Robert Silverman at the Cleveland Clinic, who claimed it was associated with prostate cancer and published in PLOS Pathogens. The study was retracted in 2012. Finally, her arrest and being charged with a felony by her former employer, Whitmore Peterson Institute for Stolen Property, meaning lab documents and computer data and equipment, she argues was planted in her home. Among her statements, she was held in jail without specific charges. There was no warrant for her arrest, no warrant for a house search. Our research shows just the opposite. Her contract states, as do almost all contracts related to research and intellectual property patents, that any and all of her work products belong to the research laboratory. These contracts prevent employees from retaining personal copies of research. To do so is theft of intellectual property. And by the way, it's across the board. After she was fired from the Institute for refusing to, quote, turn over a cell sample shipment received at her lab to another researcher, according to legal documents, the Institute discovered missing lab notebooks and flash drives that contained years of research. A colleague at the Institute and her co-author on the retracted study admitted in a sworn affidavit that he had taken items from the lab on her behalf. Only after her colleague's admission was an arrest warrant issued. A second colleague also signed a sworn affidavit that Mickiewicz had asked to remove laboratory samples. Warrants for her arrest and the search and recovery of stolen property at her home were issued by the University of Nevada at Reno Police Department. 18 notebooks and a computer with data were uncovered at her home. The most probable cause of the theft, despite her claims, is that despite her study on the XMRV virus was seriously flawed, she had ever intention to continue her line of research to prove her legitimacy. That is our contention. If we are wrong, we acknowledge it. But to say that I was arrested, but no arrest warrant, they searched my home, nothing, it doesn't happen that way. You have to have probable cause. You have to go before a judge. You have to have a reason to search someone's house and to arrest someone. The charges were dropped when the material was recovered. She claims that Anthony Fauci and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease was largely responsible for the end of her career at the National Cancer Institute. More likely, in our opinion, her vendetta against Fauci is the primary reason in all these media interviews is that Fauci commissioned a study at Columbia University to prove or disprove her research on the XMRV associated with chronic fatigue syndrome, and Fauci's insistence on an independent study potentially cost her research and the dollars that go with it. Also, Anthony Fauci, she claims, profited from retaining ownership claims for the inventions. This is partly true, although Mickiewicz's critics argue it is false. In fact, Fauci first patented using the interleukin-2 as a treatment for viral infections has become a scandal and blemish on Fauci's character. An article published in 2005 issue of the British Medical Journal confirmed that Fauci and his colleagues received $8.9 million in royalty payments for developing interleukin-2. Fauci told the British Medical Journal that he was required by law to put his name on the patent for the development of interleukin-2 and was also required by law to receive part of the payment the government receives for use of the patent. However, although he profited financially, he does not hold ownership per Mickiewicz's claim. Now, we have done everything possible to have Judy Mickiewicz share documents with us to clarify these issues. We are so open to receiving and sharing with you anything that will clarify with real documentation. Otherwise, these statements, unfortunately, are here. And this is one of the problems when you come on this show. I hope you come on to share the facts. Separately, the guest we had on, Dr. McCoy, she is highly respected. She has done a lot of original research. And those who would like to attack her because of her, quote, far-right leanings, I've seen this canard too many times, both on the left and the right. Take the politics out. What she is saying, that a person is immune to life and we should have herd immunity, there is no proof that I can find in the scientific literature, so little proof that last week we wrote an article and published it fully footnoted and fully documenting that there is no proof of herd immunity. It's one of these theories, hypothesis. So think of the people who would expose themselves intentionally without realizing that they may be asymptomatic, take that home, and then infect someone who is already immune compromised, a mother, father, grandparent, even a child with leukemia or cancer. So I consider that irresponsible of Dr. McCoy. Secondly, that you create antibodies for life, there is no proof of that either. In fact, right now, the study tests being used are themselves not confirmatory. So, and yet right now there's a rush by biotech companies and surveillance companies. Starting this week, TSA is going to do head scans in major airports, and if your temperature is 100 degrees, you won't be able to get on that flight. And yet there are many other causes for raised temperature other than the coronavirus. Also, the idea of having hundreds of thousands or thousands of people hired to make sure that everybody gets their test taken or vaccine given. You can bet, no matter what else happens on this, that a properly untested and completely experimental vaccine will be mandated. Then let's see how many people who have been pro-vaccine roll up their arms. And then that's only the beginning. A vaccine card, identity badge. What does that sound like? That's fascism. And we have fascism now in the United States. Now we're going to go to something I want you to hear from. I'll hold the Italian Senate, or the Italian Parliament. Let's go to the Corbett Report, because Corbett is probably one of the finest researchers in the world, investigative journalist. He's not a medical doctor. He does not have a background in sciences, but boy, does he get the facts like nobody else. Here's what he has to say on how inaccurate the death count is. And by the way, this is the claim of both people in the parliament. Keep in mind, what I like about the Italian parliamentary system is you have over 160 different groups, parties, and therefore people can get up and they can rant about just about anything they want. But at least you have people who are not afraid of telling the truth. And one of the people in the clip that you're going to hear in the next day or two is stating, and he is a scientist, he is a doctor, and he's saying that those initial death certificates, they were signed as COVID when they all died in nursing homes or assisted livings. They all had comorbidities, meaning they had two or more diseases. They were in a polluted area, and they were going to die. And yet all their deaths were attributed to COVID. And he said, that's not good science. He is right. Let me make this emphatic and absolutely clear. I'll save Charles Ortlieb's a commentary for tomorrow because it's extremely enlightening. One, there's been no accurate death assessment of everyone who's died, who's been claimed to die from coronavirus. There's been no detailed histological, genetic, and autopsy reports on each person. We know there's been falsification in nursing homes to put COVID on it. We know that doctors have been pressured to put COVID on death certificates no matter how many comorbidities they have. So therefore, if you're starting off saying this amount of people have died from COVID, and if those are exaggerated by 90%, then we don't have a pandemic, we don't have an epidemic, we don't even have a normal flu season. But look at all the trillions of dollars made. Who do you think is going to get that money? I'm going to have Michael Hudson on to tell you. It's the banks, it's the airlines, it's every major industry who've got lobbyists. Who's not going to get any of the money? You, me, small businesses? Wait in line, take a ticket. And if you wonder how long does it take when you take a ticket, well, why don't you ask all the people who are still waiting for their compensation for the damage that was done when they were working in uranium mines? That's the 1940s and 50s. They're still waiting. And how about the people from glyphosate and asbestos? They're still waiting. So you see, you got a long time to wait. If you want more on this, read Counterpunch, Brett Wilkins' Today article, quote, "Veterans exposed in the Cold War bioweapons testing still waiting answers and help." Quote, "Over 1,000 American sailors were unwittingly exposed to chemicals and biological warfare agents in the 1960s and early 70s as part of a secret military experiment to study vulnerability of U.S. Navy ships in germ warfare attacks. The Pentagon responded to the report by insisting that the sailors, quote, were not exposed to any harmful chemicals and biological compounds, end quote. They were, quote, fully informed about the details of each test. Neither of these claims turned out to be true, and yet they haven't been helped. Imagine what's going to happen when you have a crazy-ass vaccine running onto the market and you make it mandatory. You're looking at a biological genocide. Now to the Corbett Report.
That you have heard about contact tracing in the past few weeks. I'm also willing to bet it is a term that you have never heard before in your life prior to the last few weeks. Something to cogitate on, and I have a remarkably profound but remarkably simple observation about that coming up for you. But for those who have somehow managed to miss this term, contact tracing, and its definition, well, why take it from me? Let's take it from the Clinton Global Initiative.
One of the elements, key elements, in your plan to be able to reopen California, and I liked it, by the way, because you didn't overpromise. You didn't promise you could do things you couldn't, and you made it clear that unless you could do it without more people getting sick and dying, it couldn't be done. But one of the things that you have to be able to do is to track people who are positive. Where were they? Who were they in contact with? How can you hem up any recurrence of this? Massachusetts has recently announced that they're going to try to build a statewide tracking program, and they've asked partners in health to run it for them. And they're one of my partners in the work we've done in Africa, Haiti, and other places. But where are we going to get all these contact tracers? Should we have, like you did with California did with the Conservation Corps of young people? Should we have a contract tracer corps, even if we call it something more elegant? Should we really build the first public health network we've ever really built in this country around this issue?
I think the answer is absolutely yes. And I love the Massachusetts example. We were able to learn from them. We're all sharing best practices in real time. But this is an interesting point that's often not brought up. We have tracing capacity that predates COVID-19, that goes back to SARS, measles, TB, et cetera, tracking and tracing capacity that exists in the county levels primarily, and increasing capacity at the state level. So what we're doing is we're building off that existing infrastructure and using the tools of technology to overlay. In addition to that, we're using AmeriCorps specifically. Thank you as a champion for AmeriCorps. For decades, we've been able to take advantage of that workforce. Obviously, our conservation corps, what we have now is called Cal Volunteers. In the spirit of Sarge Shriver, we are asking people, thousands of folks, to be part of this new corps, to get trained and to help us with the tracing. Because you're absolutely right. The predicate for getting back to some semblance of normalcy is our ability to identify individuals through testing, to be able to trace their contacts, to isolate individuals that have either been exposed or quarantined people that are tested positive. And that's just going to require an army of folks and the capacity of consideration from individuals to allow for their privacy to be impacted by that kind of acuity of attention based upon where they've been and who they.
Okay, that's just the beginning. Tomorrow I will continue, and the corporate report will show you how dangerous it is, where everyone's now going to be tested and, quote, quarantine. That doesn't mean quarantine in your home. You'll see what I'm talking about tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone.